Hello, my name's Doug Phillips. I served in the Australian Army Catering Corps from 1972 to 1995.
That's quite a while, Doug. Hello and welcome to Service Voices.
Thank you.
That's a period of over 20 years.
That's right. 20 years, I served in quite a few different units.
And when you first began your Army career, you actually joined up. You weren't a national serviceman, you joined up of your own volition.
I did, I joined up and I joined the ARA, it was called back then.
Yeah, the Australian Regular Army.
Yes.
Had you always wanted to join the Army?
No, I just made a decision when I was about just over 17 that I'd like a bit of a change.
17 is very young, isn't it?
It was, yeah.
What did your family think of you joining up?
Yeah, Mum and Dad thought it was great.
They did?
Yeah.
Of course, we were still involved in Vietnam in 1972.
That's right. Vietnam finished about a year after I joined.
Yep, yep. And we had withdrawn our troops from Borneo and the Malaya conflict with Indonesia, but we still had troops in Malaya at that stage.
Yes, I think at the Air Force Base.
So, Doug, tell us what happened after you did your recruit course. You've joined the Catering Corps, which is not a corps that a great many soldiers aspire to.
No.
What happened?
Initially, I didn't want to be a cook. I wanted to be something else. But they decided for me that that's what I should be. I think a lot of that was done back in those days. So I went to Bona Gilla to learn my trade.
What had you chosen before?
I think it was an aircraft fitter.
That's far distance from being a cook in the Army, isn't it?
Yes, it is. But it was all a bit of a sort of maybe an adventure back then. And that decision was made and I went with what they did.
So no hard feelings about that?
Absolutely
at the time?
Not, no.
So you just buckled down and you packed your bag and took off for Bona Gilla.
That's right.
What was it, Bona Gilla?
Bona Gilla was the catering school there. It backed onto the Hume Weir. It was old, very old barracks. They were just all wooden huts like that they used to have migrants in, I think. The shower block was, you have to walk 20 or 30 metres from your room over the road to the shower block. Was a big fireplace in the canteen where you used to go at nights.
And how long were you there for and what did they actually train you to do at that stage?
We were there for about 3 months. Then just basic cooking, some pastry work and very basic cooking.
Had you done much cooking at home as a child?
Absolutely,
as a young
none.
Person? None. Mum had already always done it for you.
Everything, yes.
So you graduated after a period of 3 months from Army School of Catering. Where did you go from there?
From there I went to my first posting, the School of Military Engineers at Liverpool in Sydney. I got off the train at Liverpool Station and the driver picked me up and he took me to Ingleburn. I went into the guard room then. It was an infantry unit and I thought, this is not right. They had a big cage there, so there were some prisoners in there. I didn't know what was going on here. So eventually they rang up my unit where I was supposed to go, SME, and driver from there come and pick me up and I went over.
Did you get into trouble for being
late? No, for some reason I'm not sure what happened. The driver didn't pick me up at the station and this driver was there, so.
It'd be surprising because School of Military Engineering at that stage was churning out sappers to go to Vietnam.
Oh, that's right, yeah. For instance, the OR's kitchen had four dining rooms. Four big bain-maries and most times they were all full of, sappers, national servicemen. In the mornings at breakfast, there'd be a corporal at the door and if they weren't correctly dressed, hair done, everything right, they were sent away.
Oh, no breakfast for you, mate.
That's correct. Back to your room and fix yourself up.
Were they really strict there? Apart from that, the corporal at the door?
Oh, no, I don't. Engineers were probably one of the better.
Less regimented?
Very less regimented, yes.
And what was their expectations of you as a cook?
Corporal and other privates that had been in the Army for some time would do a lot of the cooking and we do a lot of preparation, cutting up huge tubs of meat and vegetable prep, potatoes. After a little while they let you do some pastry work sometimes.
Did you find that your basic chef's course had actually covered what you were required to do there?
Not some of the pastry work. Some of my short crust pastry was like little bits of wood. I soon learned, because we had a civilian cook who used to be a pastry cook and he'd give us some ideas and different things. He's You learn pretty quickly.
Were they hard taskmasters? There's a lot of stories around about army cooks.
Oh no, we used to work shift work, 2 days on and 2 days off every second weekend. It was an old kitchen there. The pig man used to come and pick up the scraps back then, and we had all the bins were separated, pig, wet and dry, and we had a big bell out the back where they'd render fat down. I'm not sure where that went to, but yes, that was old. Long time ago.
They were the days before prepackaged foods, so you wouldn't have had many plastics. Were plastics around in those days?
No, nothing like that.
So the main rubbish from a kitchen in those days was food?
Oh, yeah, cans and, vegetables and scraps.
Mm-hmm. What's your fondest memory of School of Military Engineering?
Once I went home and I couldn't get back to the... because my family lived in Brisbane and we were in Sydney. I went home and I couldn't get back, so they had to charge me.
Oh, no, why couldn't you get
back? I was charged with AWOL. The caterer marched me into the RSM and it was all squashed because of the plane couldn't get me back from bad weather, I think.
All right, so it wasn't that you didn't want to come back. You wanted to come back but just couldn't reach it.
That's right. Oh, and back then we had a butcher. And
was he an army butcher?
Yes, no more, I don't think, no more army butchers.
It's changed a lot these days.
Oh, it certainly has, yeah.
Catering has let out to civilians. I don't know if that applies right across the board.
There's two places where they've got army cooks, and they're, I think, Brisbane and Sydney. I'm not really sure. I've only heard it lately. No army cooks in any unit except one in Western Australia.
Wow. You'd wonder why they have one.
I think it's the SAS.
Ah, right. They don't want civilians in there.
Yes,
they want their own military personnel in there.
And there's no army stewards either. That's all gone.
Mm. And what was the role of a steward?
Well, mainly in the sergeants and officers' mess. They had a sergeant steward who run the mess. And stewards who would serve. So that's all gone now.
And I think they've got a fancy name for stewards these days. I can't quite remember off the top of my head what it is.
So those roles are gone. I expect some civilian staff do that, but probably wouldn't be quite the same. Oh, another thing about when I was at SME, National Service finished, and all the National Servicemen had a meeting one morning somewhere in the barracks, and they just all, in the afternoon, they drove out or just walked out the gate. Yeah.
I would have thought they would still need to be discharged in the great manner.
I'm not sure how they did it, but most of them just all walked out. A couple stayed in, but not many.
So that's amazing. So how many people did you cater for there?
Oh, it'll be 200 or 300. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did they come in shifts?
No, just breakfast, lunch and dinner.
Mm-hmm. So did you have to turn up at, say, 7 a.m. for breakfast, or could you roll in at 7:30?
Yes, we'd start work. It was You start at 5:30 in the morning, prepare breakfast, and that breakfast was probably from 7 till 8:30.
Mm-hmm. Okay, from SME, the School of Military Engineering, where to after that?
From there I went to the LWC, Land Warfare Centre at Canungra.
Okay, well, that's a big step, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a bit different.
And Canungra in those days was used for the stepping-off place for troops going to Vietnam.
Yes, we had quite a few different... we had Gurkhas there from overseas. It was very wet there, very tropical. One of the things I remember there, outside the back door of the OR's mess, there's a few bushes and it was full of leeches there. We didn't want to get in there.
Goodness. And what about the facilities that you had to cook in? What were they like?
Oh, very modern at Canungra then.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just, they were all new kitchens.
A bit better than SME.
Yeah, the SME one was very old and that's gone now. I've been back there in civilian life to cook. I was fortunate enough. So there's a brand new kitchen there.
Right. How come you went back in civvy life?
I did some cooking after, and I was fortunate enough to have a job come up there, and I went back there.
Was it for the military or for someone else?
For someone else, yes. No, it was working for a company who'd got the contract to do the cooking there.
And what were they running in the area at that stage?
Yes, it was just doing the same thing.
Training?
Training, yeah. But even now, I believe that SME at that particular place is closed now. And they've moved out to Holsworthy.
Okay, so getting back to Canungra.
Yeah.
It was a big step away from SME and the antiquated cooking facilities there. And what about the numbers of troops you were feeding and the food that you had to provide and the expectations? Tell us about your your day and a bit about that.
It's still the same shift as at SME, and 2 days on and 2 days off, 3 meals a day. It was probably for a bit less, about 100 in the OR's mess maybe, 120. There was a sergeant cook, a corporal, and about 3 privates on the shift.
Any interesting stories come out of Canungra? Oh. Yes, there are. I can see by the smile on your face.
I'd have to think. 10 Independent Rifle Company did the demonstrations, and they went out into the bush for the enemy. Cooks, we didn't have anything to do with any of that. So, I lived in Brisbane. I got married while I was at Canungra, lived in Brisbane. We used to drive backwards and forwards. I'd stay on base for the 2 or 3 days that we were on, and then I'd drive back.
How far is it from Brisbane?
I think it was about an hour's drive.
Fair distance, but yes. not too bad.
No, I shared the driving with the Corporal Cook. He'd do one shift and I'd do the other.
Were you still a private at that stage?
Yes, I was still a private. One of the things I remember was you'd drive home and the cane toads all over the road and you'd be popping cane toads on your car. Yeah, it's in the wet season.
And how long were you at Canungra for?
A couple of years again. I spent 2 years there. And then I was posted to the 1st Field Engineer Regiment in Sydney.
Talk about that.
Well, that was my first field force unit, what they call a combat unit now, so it was very different. You went on exercises, training, up to Newcastle. We did quite a few exercises up there. Training was different. You had to do more fitness tests, battle fitness tests. One of the ones we went to up in Newcastle, we marched along for 2 days to the beach, marched along the beach, and then come back again.
Talk about the work that One Field Regiment did.
The bridge building, night work, making roads.
Interesting that your first posting was to School of Military Engineering, and then you went to One Field Regiment, which is still part of the Royal Australian Engineers.
Yes. I'm not sure, but I got the same caterer, the same warrant officer was at 1FER.
Maybe the engineers liked your food.
Yes, I was lucky there. He got me my promotion courses there. I was promoted to corporal at 1FER.
And did you have to go on a course to do that?
Yes, a couple of courses.
Within the same
one was
area?
With the unit, subject one for corporal, I think they called it back then. I did it with the unit, yeah, all the corporals. Well, I knew, because then I knew all the corporals, so they made it a little bit easier for me, I think. Everyone got on really well.
So you've been promoted. Did that also involve doing increased chef training?
Yeah, I went to Pakapanyal to do the next course, AFS course, I think they called it, Advanced Food Services.
Mm-hmm. What did that entail?
Yeah, it's much more involved. You just learned more complicated tasks in cooking, cake decorating and advanced cooking methods of lots of different things.
Is that because you were catering for officers or the sergeant's mess and that required a different standard of cooking or a different type?
Yeah, I think to bring your standard up to be a bit higher. I was working in the officer's mess there, but we only had about not many officers in that kitchen. The ORs ate in the 812 Medium Regiment artillery kitchen, and that's where the caterer's office was, and the officer's mess where I worked was a bit of a distance away because the 1st Field Engineer Regiment was across the road.
Interesting. What about the equipment you used? We've determined that the premises themselves were much more modern and updated. What about the equipment you used?
Yeah, a bit better than what we had at SME.
And the quality of the food? Looking back now from a point of view in 2017, would you say it was healthy food?
Oh, yes. It's all cooked fresh. Everything was done properly and hygiene was very good. Right now you have to wear gloves and I don't know what else you have to put on, hairnets and things, but back then hygiene was very good. We never had any problem at all with hygiene. The duty officer had to come every evening and inspect the kitchen before we were allowed to go home.
Right. That's the old army, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes, and he quite, not often, but he would walk in, have a look around, and if he found something, he'd say, oh, well, I'll be back in an hour, and it might take you 5 minutes to clean something up, and come back in an hour and say, OK, you can go home now.
That taught you not to do it again.
Yeah.
So you've moved up. You're no longer a private. You're a corporal, which is a two-striper.
Yeah.
Or two chevrons. And you've advanced your cooking skills.
Yes.
Where to from there?
Like I said, the caterer, his name was Kenny Rice. I do believe he's passed on.
That's a great name for a chef, isn't it?
A bit sad for me.
Oh.
Anyhow, yeah, so he came in. Like I said, he had some influence. He came into the, we had a parade, and he said, "Would anyone like to go to Darwin?" So I thought, well, that'd be good. So I went home and talked to my partner then, and she agreed to go, and we went to Darwin.
What was the unit you were posted to in Darwin?
Headquarters 7MD.
Oh, military district.
Yeah. I worked in the officer's mess there. It was very old building.
Where was it located, Doug?
Larrakia Barracks, right on the water, on the peninsula, I think you'd call it. The food was taken up to the dining room in a little lift. So we'd cook the food and up it'd go. Only for not very small number of people there. One of the memories from that was I've put something on the stove, some oil on the stove one day, and it caught fire. So I had to grab that and throw it. I threw it out the back door. Fire went out. Luckily, I didn't burn it down.
Otherwise, you would have been back to being a private again.
Yeah, possibly. We lived on the barracks there, on the base. The house we had was, I'd been told that it had been through Cyclone Tracy, and it was only about 200 metres from the cliff top down to the ocean. I used to go fishing most days. It was good.
Sounds like a good life.
Yes, it was good, yeah. I was told our house, because it was one, a very old one, was bigger than the CO's house, because the ladies used to all get on. And yes, she'd come down and spoke to my partner, and they'd been there. We had quite a big house. It was very big. High set. Louvers all the way around the house. And when it rained, used to blow the rain straight through the louvers.
How did you cope with the silly season, the cyclone season?
Oh, we had a cyclone there, Cyclone Max. Everybody went into one of the barracks. They'd made it cyclone proof, and it was all the doors were cyclone proof. And we all went in there and huddled in there for overnight till it went, and it was went back to our house the next morning.
And of course, I suppose coming from Queensland originally, you would have been used to that wet season and the build up to it.
Yes, it's a little bit different up there than Queensland, than Brisbane. A
bit more intense.
Much more intense. Rained, it just come down. The yard would fill up with water, 6 inches of water in the yard.
And lots of those cane toads again?
Oh, no cane toads in Darwin, I don't think, back then. I think they're trying to move their way up there, but I don't think there's any there. Big, huge goannas used to live in the drains. You'd be driving along the road and one would scarper down the drain.
Did they ever cause a problem for you?
No, none at all.
So you enjoyed Darwin?
I did, yes. Well, they had it's still on Larrakia Barracks, down on the water. They had a big fish trap, like a chain wire thing. And just before I left, they caught two huge barramundi there.
I thought you were going to say crocodiles for a minute.
Oh, no.
No doubt they were around too.
Yeah, they were.
What happened to the barras?
Oh, they went up to the sergeant's mess. They had them in the big, huge freezer. They just fitted into the freezer, big chest freezer.
Did you cook them?
No, I didn't, because I didn't work down there. I went up and had a look, though.
Barramundi. Oh, they're a delicious fish.
I'd only been posted to Darwin about a week or 2 weeks, and when you get posted to Darwin, your house is fully furnished, so all your belongings get put into storage. So I didn't have anything, and I wanted to go fishing. So I borrowed a fishing rod from one of the cooks, and I went down to the water and caught a barramundi, but it was the only one I ever caught when I was there.
It was a temptation to keep you there, wasn't it?
Yeah.
What did you catch?
After that, it was just mainly trevally and queenfish. Not a lot, though.
But it was still good fun. Still nice eating.
Yeah.
Still nice eating, particularly for someone with a bit of chefing experience under his belt.
Yeah.
So, Doug, what happened when you were told that you were going to be posted out of Darwin?
Oh, well, we... A
bit disappointed?
My wife then didn't... I don't think she enjoyed it a lot. So she wanted to leave.
Is that because of the heat?
I think her family was in Sydney and she wanted to go back closer to them. Initially, I applied for a discharge. We went to Brisbane and I was going to get out there. And then I decided that I would stay in. So I went to a counsellor, army counsellor, and I got to stay in, and they posted me to 2-3 field engineer regiment.
Oh, back with the engineers
back
again.
Back with the engineers again.
They loved you, didn't they? Mm. Talk about that posting. And where was it located?
In Brisbane, 2-3 FER at Inaugural Barracks. That was good. Lots of trips up to Shoalwater Bay.
And what was it, Shoalwater Bay?
Shoalwater Bay training area. We'd go up there for 4 or 5 weeks. Sometimes it was engineers stayed for longer and cooks would be rotated back. You'd come back for a couple of weeks and then go back again.
So what were the cooking facilities that you took with you?
Oh, we cooked in had a big tents. Engineers put the tents up, so we're very lucky. Engineers put everything up for us. Shower blocks. We had hot and running, cold running water.
Of course you did. The engineers do their job nicely, don't they?
Very good. They had a big kitchen. We had, I think they call M59 burners, chuffers.
What's a chuffer?
Chuffer's a thing, it's like a big garbage can with a heating element sort of thing inside. It's run with petrol.
And what does it do?
Heats water.
Oh, okay.
You would turn the petrol on and it had a little preheating unit in it. But if you got up early in the morning and you wanted to wake everybody up, you would just let the petrol run down and then throw a match down and it would make quite an explosion.
A big woof.
Oh, yeah. Blow the pipe because they had a chimney on them. The chimney would go everywhere. Black soot would go everywhere. Yeah.
Did you get a few harsh words said to you over that?
No, no. It was a bit of a joke. Good fun. They were petrol and the M59 burners were run with petrol, so you'd have to fill them up every night before you finish work. Out there, up at Shoalwater Bay, up 5 o'clock in the morning. You wouldn't finish work till 7 o'clock each night. Long days.
Very long day. Yeah. Very long day. Now, one thing puzzles me. Did you have to do your own dishes?
Yeah, you'd have to Dixie bashing.
So you'd not only have to cook the meals, you'd then have to clean up after
yourself.
Oh, clean
all the pots and pans. Yeah, someone would have to do that, yeah.
Right. I bet you hated that.
No, it was just something you had to do, so you got on with it.
In the women's units, we usually had a person called a GD, General Duties, and they would do the dishes.
No, we didn't get many of them up there. No, not at Shoalwater Bay, or not with that unit. I know what you mean. Back at SME, I think, because that was a school, we would get some of them there. We'd get some come in and do the help with the dining room, but not up there because they were trained soldiers and that's not the sort of work they were going to do.
So you're back in Queensland. How's your wife taking that? Is she happy that she's a bit closer to Sydney?
She was, but eventually my wife's brother was killed in an accident while I was at Shoalwater Bay at one period and I was flown back to Brisbane.
Is it a car accident?
Yes. And she went to Sydney. I looked after the kids for a couple of days, a week or more. And then after that, I'm not sure what went on inside of her, but she left and I was left with the kids. Or I got the kids after the period of time and, yeah, that was it. So that was the end of my period at 2-3 FER. Although another thing I could tell you about Shoalwater Bay, we went up there once, just digressing a little bit. They had a big fire pit where everyone would, and a little bit of a canteen where you could go and have a drink sometimes at night. And it was a huge fire pit. It was 10 metres long and a couple of metres wide where you could sit around the fire. So we went up there and I come back to Brisbane for my break, went back up and there's a big fence, chain wire fence around the fire pit. And I said, well, what's happened here? Well, someone had gone to sleep and fallen into the fire.
No, were they killed?
I don't think he was hurt very bad, but that was the end of having it open. It was just bit of OH&S there, keep it enclosed off, so no, that couldn't happen again.
Oh, goodness. Well, I can remember travelling around on the backs of trucks, you know, there's great big trucks, open trucks at the back. Yeah. And apparently you're not allowed to do that now in the military. You've got to all have seats and you've also all got to have seatbelts.
No, there's no seatbelts back then.
No.
No, in the back of the truck, and they'd enclose the back, but there was no seatbelts. You just sit on the on the seats that were in there.
The wooden seats or the wooden metal seats, yeah. With all the splinters.
Yeah. Mm. One memory from I was at up at Newcastle, probably when I was at 1FER, and we got into the truck to come home, and it had been hot and dry, and we got in the back of the truck. We're still in the bush a little bit, and just the back of the truck was just all the dust just come in. You could hardly breathe, but that's the way it was. So then we go back now to 2-3. So obviously I couldn't, because I had the two kids on my own. So then I asked for a posting somewhere else where field work wasn't required. And so they posted me to one military hospital.
Right, and did they provide accommodation?
No, I was renting a house then, so I got a house. I was lucky, I got a house, the house next to my mother, and she helped me out quite considerably.
How old were your children at this stage?
Oh, they were very young. Craig was about 4 or 5, and Megan was two or three.
Very young, yeah. Very young for to be left with. To bring up by yourself.
Yes, I got a good babysitter, a lady who, her name was Robin. She helped me a lot. She used to look after the kids overnight quite often. While I was at the hospital, I was got another course, promotion course at Packer again, and she looked after them while I went down there.
You were lucky then, weren't
yeah.
you? So at what stage are you in your career? How many years into your career at this stage?
Ooh. 10 years, probably.
Almost halfway through.
Yeah.
And the promotion course you did, what did that take you up to the rank of?
That's the sergeant's course. I think it qualified me for warrant officer as well, that particular course. So you go to Packer and lots of paperwork, learning, rationing and what you had to do in there. Yeah.
Because a lot of people don't understand or don't even think about the fact that if you're feeding 200 or 300 troops, there's a lot of administrative work that goes on behind that.
Oh, that's right, yeah. Mm. Because back then you had to order all your rations. It all had to be done a couple of times a week. You had to, I forget all the paperwork, to tell you the truth. There was quite an amount of it, though. The ration truck used to come around, well, I think, 3 days a week, Monday, Wednesdays and Fridays, and deliver all your vegetables and a meat truck and a vegetable truck. Yeah.
And did you still have the pig man coming each
no,
day?
No, that's all gone. I think that was all made quite illegal because of the hygiene rules. And
Explain why that was made illegal. You talk about hygiene, but it was a specific reason for that, wasn't it?
I think from diseases pigs could probably get from the food that could have gone off.
Yes, yeah. And particularly processed meat apparently, like salamis and the like. Apparently that could cause problems where that meat had been imported and used in Australia and was likely to and transmit problems to our...
It could have, yeah. It could have transmitted to the animals, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so you've come back from your sergeant's course. How did that change the work that you were doing back at the unit?
Well, nothing really. You just because I'm still not a sergeant. I'm half qualified and... life carried on at the hospital. I looked after got my two kids into school and went on with things. Oh, one of the things at the hospital was they had PTIs there, physical training instructors. And they were all, a PTI that back at that stage was, they were artillery. They were from the artillery corps. And they would be doing things with patients, you know, like after their operations or... They would help them. Also, they would take us for PT 3 times a week. So that was...
So with the patients, it was sort of a rehabilitation
scheme?
Yeah,
rehabilitation, yeah.
Okay. And then they wanted to make the cooks fit too.
Yes. So three cooks and all the nurses and whoever, other people there. Yeah, 3 times a week. They'd take us for about 40 minutes. It was quite exciting.
Do you think you got fitter than you would have without it?
Oh, yeah, I did, because it was one of the tests back then. The fitness test was you had to do 5 kilometre run and chin-ups and sit-ups were the three things we had to do. So I wasn't very good at running or the chin-ups. So I'd stay back and do a 5 kilometre run on my own, go to the gym where it was in the hospital and do chin-ups. because it was arms jump on the bar, and you had to go down to your arms straight and then arms but up, chin above the bar. It was not easy.
Do you reckon it helped in your work?
In my work?
Lifting heavy trays of scones and things?
Well,
roast meat?
It made you, it was good. I liked it. I enjoyed the PT.
Good.
They made it interesting all the time.
Did you stay there long enough for your children to be settled at school?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they went to that particular school for quite a while. I got involved in the school, actually. I was up and they made me the secretary at the parents and teachers. I did that for a little while. The kids liked the headmaster there and they liked them. So I'd been there for about 5 years at the hospital. And then they said, Doug, you've got a posting. So they posted me to 7 Signal Regiment, Borneo Barracks at Kabbala.
Oh, and where's Kabbala?
Up near Toowoomba. It's about 20 minutes drive out of Toowoomba.
Beautiful area.
Yeah, it was. They had a big golf course. We had the greenies used to come. They thought we had big, I don't know what, would pop up out of the golf course and rockets and I don't know what.
Sorry, I didn't quite get that. The greenies would come and they'd pop up out of the...
No, they thought that the army had
had
some kind of missiles that would just pop up out of the greens on the golf course.
Oh, for goodness sake. And by greenies, you're talking about people that are protesting about the military.
Yeah. 7 Signal Regiment, later on, while I was there, became 7 Sig EW, Electronic Warfare. One of the jobs I did was on the tip of Cape York, and we had to go up there. Cooks had a four-week rotation where you go there for 4 weeks. We were flown up there. We'd go down to, I think, the Amberley RAF base with all the equipment. We'd get on a C-130, and they took us to Weipa. And from Weipa, we got on a Caribou, and that took us up to Bamiga on the tip of Cape York. So then that was one of the most exciting things I've done in the Army up there.
Did you like it?
Oh, yes. It was almost like a holiday.
Yeah. So what sort of work did you do? Was it purely cooking or were you expected to carry out other duties within the unit?
No, just cooking. If you weren't security cleared, we had the kitchen and the accommodation, and that was sort of fenced off. And then in another fenced off area, they had the whatever it was they were doing, and that was called the deck, they called it, that's right, the deck of these little demountable things. Whatever they had in there, that you weren't not, because we weren't security cleared, you weren't allowed near it.
So did you know exactly what sort of work they were doing there?
No.
You never found
secret
that out?
Secret work, something to do with New Guinea or Indonesia perhaps, but not really.
While you were up there, someone else looking after the children, I suppose they
you? Oh, yes, my dad looked after my dad came up and looked after the kids while I was up there. Even that's good of him. A better story is while I was up, I got a couple of stories.
Go on then, tell us.
While we're up there, we did something. The local community had something they called the Iron Man of Possession Island. So we, Doug, you can go over there if you like for the day. And so we went over there and on Possession Island, one of the sergeants said, Doug, if you walk up the beach and up the cliffs, there's a big monument. This is where Captain Cook took possession of Australia. Yeah. And we did a bit of a thing on the beach. You had to run along about 20 metres, have a beer, run back and swim out about 50 metres and swim back. It was good.
Any crocodiles around in those days?
No, but the boat actually... the big boat that took us there, he parked the boat about at least 100 metres off the shore, and then a little small tinny took everybody into the thing. But a couple of fellows swam back, and I think they were lucky to get back myself, yeah.
It's renowned for those saltwater crocs up in that area.
And sharks. Another weekend up there, they said, Doug, do you want to go up to a place called Indian Head Falls? And you had to cross, so they... Two sergeants and myself. I was a corporal then. So we get in the rover and we drove up and they said, Doug, look, we can get the ferry across or we've been here before, we can run the ferry across the Jardine River. Not the ferry, we can drive the rover across the Jardine River. So we got to the side of the river And I didn't think much of it at the time, but there's a big sign there, beware of the saltwater crocodile. And they said, Doug, look, you get out and you walk across the river.
That was very kind of them, wasn't it?
Yes. So I got out and I walked across. It was only probably hip deep, not very deep. I got across the other side and I noticed another sign there, beware of the crocodiles. I said, right, I waved my arm. I said, right, oh, it's good, you can come across now. So they got about 10 metres out and they bogged the rover in the sand. So Doug, come back. So I had to walk back across the river again. They had a winch on it. Doug, you take the winch to the middle of the river. There was a big pole there. Took the winch out and I had to stand there while they pulled themselves out.
You were the lowest rank
there. Yes, but that was just one of the things that happened. And we went up to Indian Head Falls and had a bit of a lunch there. It was very a place to see up there on the tip of Cape York.
Mm. It's a lovely area, but in the really hot weather, it's a terrible place.
Oh, yes. Another thing I seen when I was up there was, because it was not an Aboriginal place, but more an Islander place, more Islander people there. A couple of things was, I used to go down to the wharf fishing. I was down there one day, and an Islander fellow come along, and he had a big heavy hand line, and he threw it out. And the next thing, he pulled in a huge giant trevally. Big spear, he speared it, his fish, it was about 4 foot long. Off he went, that was it. And we weren't catching a lot, but he caught one. Yeah, and there was another, there's down at the, when you got onto the road from the base, there was a big, couple of big trees, and they said, Doug, they were cashew nut trees. And I'd never seen one before, and a cashew nut grows on the, like a cherry tomato with the cashew nut sitting on the bottom. Yeah, that was an interesting thing to see.
Did you eat any of them? Or were,
I did
were
try
right?
one. You had to cook them, because you can't just eat them straight off the plant like that.
No,
They have to be fried or cooked or something like that. Mm. I had a go at it, but it wasn't very successful.
So you've really travelled a fair bit with the army in your career.
Yeah.
Where to after North Queensland? Or are there more stories from
more
North
stories.
Queensland?
While I was there, I got my last promotion course, Subject 1 for Sergeant. It's probably one of the hardest courses I believe you can do in the Army, Subject 1 for Sergeant. All corps do it. Everyone has to do that course to get promoted to Sergeant.
Explain why it was so difficult.
You have to do everything. You have to do a weapons lesson, a lesson in the classroom. You have to do a drill lesson. You have to go out bush and do... You get qualified to take people onto a rifle range, but it's not an easy thing to do. You have to do everything which has to be done by the book, otherwise there can be severe consequences in that particular, on a rifle range. And all the weapons, drill lessons and in the classroom, they're 40-minute lessons, and you have to start, you've got a starting time and a finishing time, and you have to start within that period. You've got maybe a minute or two leeway. So there's a lot. You have up at nights, like practicing these lessons. You go through the whole thing in your mind and you're marching around. Yeah, it's quite difficult. So I passed that and that was good.
That's good. The thing with an army cook is an army cook doesn't just cook. An army cook has to be able to serve alongside of the unit that he or she is with.
If you're posted to an infantry unit, you're a soldier I never got that opportunity. But I was told that you were a soldier first. Well, that particular cook in Afghanistan, I think, he was at the front and he died.
Mm. We've also had instances. A friend of mine was a female cook in the army and she was posted to Queensland with the commando unit up there. Mm. And, of course, she had to rappel out of helicopters and machine guns and qualify. And
yeah, I've seen quite a few cooks with parachute emblems on their sleeves where they'd done that course.
Hmm.
Yeah, so now I've qualified for sergeant. I got promoted to sergeant there. And then I got a posting to BASC in Sydney. I spent a couple of years there. At BASC, I worked in the officers' mess there. Interesting times. I did a lot of functions. Used to order everything myself for the functions. Did quite a few trips to the seafood, what do you call it, the markets in Sydney. I had a house, army house, was opposite Long Bay Jail. I had a couple of dogs. I used to run my dogs up past Long Bay Jail.
Was that military supplied house? Or
yes,
was it one?
Yeah, there was a lot of, all the people in the street were military people. The other thing I'd like to mention, While I was at Bass Randwick, it was about 1989, 1990, they decided to end the DFRDB, Defence Force Retirement and Death Benefits. It's now called, I think, MSBS, and I think that's just a tragedy that you before you only had to do 20 years and you got a sum of money if you're smart about it and you got a pension. And now all soldiers, airmen, Navy personnel, my son's in the Navy, they in the MSBS, and it's just like a superannuation that for everybody in civilian life. Don't get anything till they're 65. And you do 20 years. Some people do more, but not very many, I don't think. And it was an incentive for you to stay and do 20 years because it's a hard life. And you stayed and done your 20 years and you got a bit of money and you got a pension. That helps you out considerably. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was quite late in my career. Then I'd done 22 years. I got a posting to Brisbane then to one training group. It was a reserve unit. So there was only a sergeant steward, a sergeant cook and a warrant officer. We didn't do a lot. The caterer, the warrant officer was usually, he was responsible for any kind of rationing. So my position there was, I'm not sure, but it was a position that was made.
It was an easy, ease you out of the military type position, perhaps. Was it? A reward for all of your long years of travelling around.
Possibly. So I spent about 6 months there and decided that was it. I'd get out then. I'd had a couple of injuries. I had a knee replacement. So I thought I'd get out. That was it. I got out in Sydney. They sent me back there and I got out.
How has that impacted on your life? Have you ever regretted joining the military?
Oh, no.
No?
No, it was great times.
And did you miss it once you were out?
I think I miss it now, but it's not the same now because it's, as I said, there's no army cooks, so you can't go back to that. Those cooks posted to units is no more, so it's just not going to happen. I asked why. I said, well, how do they, because we had a dinner here where it was a reunion and we had a couple of people from Canberra come, and I said to them, what happens if units go into the field? And they said, well, these cooks are got from these couple of different establishments where they hold cooks and they just go out and do it. Otherwise, everything's done by civilian cooks.
It's a different world, isn't it?
Mm. Very sad for me that's what they've done, yeah.
Times move on, though, Doug, don't they? Yeah. I think that once you've been in the military, if you've had a reasonably good time in the military, you will always miss it.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. Doug Phillips, thank you very much for coming in today and talking with us about your army career as a cook.
Thank you for giving me this opportunity.
It's a pleasure.